Welcome to Christ Church Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
My home is not on this earth, not in this world.
So, we like to think of ourselves as kind of autonomous, wonderfully unique individuals, don't we? Like, we're these free-thinking, unaffected people, and that we work out who we are and what our identity is by something that's deeply buried within us, and over time we work out entirely who we are, and we are not affected by the outside world. We say, actually, I am who I am, and I know who I am, I know what my identity is. And it's almost like we're a little bit fenced off or buffered from the world around us. No, people, you don't affect me, I decide who I am. Nobody else gets to decide who I am. But the truth is that actually, we are deeply affected by the world around us, aren't we? Deeply influenced by the world around us, deeply influenced even by what people say to us and say about us. And that's for good and for bad. So when I was a kid at school, my handwriting was really very poor. And I can remember one of my teachers saying, "It looks like a spider has walked through ink and walked across your page." That's your handwriting. That's what they said to me. No teacher would say that now, would they, Joe? There you go. Actually, most days I say that. Yeah, about Jake's handwriting, yeah. But actually, I can't remember the teacher, but I can remember that. And now, if I write something out by hand, which you don't do very often, I'll sometimes look at it and think, looks like a spider's walked across my page. I can still remember it. I think I was about 8 when they said it to me. I can still remember it. So we remember the things that people say to us. They have an effect on us, for bad, but also for good. So when I was 19, I was part of a church in Bedford called the King's Arms, and I used to meet up with a guy there, one of the leaders there called PJ. He's a good guy, I still know him a little bit, and he had the patience to meet up with young, arrogant 19-year-old me. You think I'm obnoxious now, you should have met me 20 years ago. But he would meet with me pretty regularly, and I can't remember really anything about it because it was a long time ago. But I can remember one thing, and I remember the day he told it to me. He said, "Tim, what you need to do," and this, pause, because this is incredible. Okay, "you need to pray, read your Bible every day." Yeah, whoa. That's what he said to me. And he also said, "What you need to do, Tim, is get yourself a notebook, blank notebook, every day, write the date at the top of it, write the bits of the Bible you're reading, and then write out what you're going to pray about. Or if you're struggling to pray, write your prayers out." Okay, that was it. That's the only thing I can remember him telling me to do. But you know what? Nobody had ever told me to do that before. And actually, I started doing it and have done it ever since. So that very simple lesson had a deep effect on me. So I've read the Bible a lot more than I would have done if he hadn't told me that. God has spoken to me in those times. Lots of things have come out of the fact that he just said, "Tim, read your Bible every day, pray, get a notebook." Those three things. Words that people say have a very deep effect on us. They are very powerful. Humans are listeners. We do. We take the words that people say into ourselves, and we like to think that we don't, and in the modern world we like to think that we don't, but actually we need to acknowledge that listening changes you. And we're going to talk about that this evening. So we've been working our way through the book of James, and we're at James 1, 19 to 25 today. So I'm going to just read out this, just a short passage, and we're going to look at how listening changes you, and particularly who we listen to, how it will change us. So James says, "Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Therefore, put away all filthiness and rampant wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls. But be doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is likely a man who looks intently at his natural face in a mirror. For he looks at himself and goes away, and at once forgets what he was like. But the one who looks into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and perseveres, being no hearer who forgets, but a doer who acts, he will be blessed in all his doing." So let's remember a little bit about the book of James because it will help us. James, as best we can tell, is the brother of Jesus. Okay, and some point between Jesus' resurrection and the book of Acts, James becomes a Christian. Okay, and we think that actually Jesus appeared to James, seems to have been what happens. And as the church evolves there and grows, actually James ends up being the leader of the church in Jerusalem. And then in Acts, a great persecution hits the church and many flee from Jerusalem. Actually, like we were talking about the Ukraine earlier on, where a persecution has hit them there when the Russians invaded the east of Ukraine. Actually, churches had their buildings taken away from them. I know a few church leaders in Ukraine in the east, just in the last couple of weeks, one was put in jail, two have been told your church can't meet publicly anymore. And so Christians in the Ukraine have scattered, like we were talking about. But the same thing happens in the New Testament times, in the book of Acts. People fled, except the apostles. It seems like the apostles stayed in Jerusalem, including most likely James. Now, if you flee your country, there are a great deal of problems with that, a great deal of problems. You're most likely going to face a level of poverty, if not for a long time, but definitely initially you will face homelessness, considerable difficulty in life. You also leave yourself very vulnerable to exploitation, don't you? We see that even today. As people flee war zones and go to countries they think will be safe, they find themselves being exploited. And in this case, those that fled from Jerusalem in this persecution, actually, they were very new believers. The church there was brand new. Jesus ascended to heaven. The Holy Spirit came down. The church explodes into thousands of people really very quickly. And the church grew, but there's a lot of brand new believers, a lot of immature believers there. They were saved. Their lives have been radically changed by God. But when you're a brand new Christian, you're working it out still, aren't you? Step by step. And yet this persecution comes and they have to scatter. So the church has grown quick and scattered quick. And they are a people now under pressure. If you live in a culture that's not yours, just living and surviving is pressure, is difficulty. Just working out the language difference, for example, there is pressure there. So James, in Jerusalem, he's the pastor now of a scattered church. And so he writes to them, knowing that actually life is difficult for these people. So he wanted his church that are under pressure, that have scattered. Actually, he wants them to understand the importance of listening. You might think, well, that's maybe they should understand the importance of how to survive in a foreign culture. Well, actually, understand the importance of listening. And it is really very important. So we're going to look at that today, how listening changes you. And we're going to see that, first of all, we have to actually listen. We listen first. And that when we do, listening brings change, brings life, and it brings action. So he starts off by saying, look, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. So the first and obvious thing is that listening comes first. Listening is important. And actually, when you think about it, listening is a bit of a lost art, isn't it? How many of you here have maybe been at a social event, some sort of house party? You found yourself at 11:30 at night, stuck in the kitchen with a person that only wants to talk about themselves and won't ask you any questions about anything. And when you try and change the subject, they just manage to flip it back to themselves. How many of you had that experience? Yeah. Or maybe you've been stuck in a pub and you're in that corner seat. You can't get out because there are people everywhere. And you're stuck next to the person you know all they're going to do is talk about their football team for hours. You try and change the subject and their brain just kind of partially breaks. Dowswell? All right. But listening is a bit of a lost art. And when you're stuck in that situation, it's agony, isn't it? You think, oh, gosh, they're not going to ask me anything about me. Even when I try and change the subject to be about something else or to begin a conversation, they just want to talk at me. They're not listening. They're just talking. But how good is it, though, when you find yourself in a situation where you meet someone and they want to know about you? They want to ask you questions. They want to find out about you. And you know this is interesting because someone will ask you a question, you'll answer it, and then they will ask you a follow-up question. At that point, you know you've met a social genius, okay? The follow-up question. Incidentally, if you want to make friends with people and you think you're struggling, ask a question, listen to what's been said, ask a follow-up question. They'll think you're a social legend. I'm just saying. It is a lost art. It's wonderful, though, when somebody does that. And James says, look, you need to be quick to listen. Listen first. It's amazing how often we'll go into kind of friendships and relationships thinking, I want people to know about me. Talk first. That's what I'm going to do. This is who I am. Listen to me. Actually, it should be the other way, shouldn't it? We listen first. James also said, look, you need to be slow to anger. In other words, listen first, be very slow to react. React slowly. We live actually in very reactive times, don't we? If you just watch the news channel or if you flick through Twitter for more than 3 seconds, you will see that there is statement and reaction. And neither side changes their minds. It's all about the cycle of offence, of people reacting quickly and not listening. James knew, actually, look, those that listen, those that look to genuinely understand, actually, that is very deep wisdom. Proverbs says, whoever restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. In other words, if you're quiet and if you listen, you're going to understand a whole lot more than someone who just talks. And Proverbs then goes on and says, even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is deemed intelligent. That's good advice. There's a number of situations I've found myself in recently, and I've been reading Proverbs, and me and the girls have been reading Proverbs, and I've thought about 17:28, this last bit. I thought, Tim, at this moment, just be quiet, because even if you don't know what's going on, people will think you'll know what's going on just because you're not saying anything. That's a good thing. Just sit quietly and see what you can learn. You can look intelligent by not saying anything stupid. So how do we listen? Well, first, you have to start with listening. Okay? We listen first. And actually, just if you think about it, if we just as a group of people decided, okay, this week my job is to listen to the people I meet first, I'll listen to what they say, and then I'll ask them a follow-up question, I bet you will improve the weeks of so many people that you know. I reckon your impact will be much more than you would think it would be. So then James says, actually, what listening brings change as well. And it brings change to the listener as well as the person you are listening to. Okay? So to listen actually is a big statement of humility, isn't it? It's to lay yourself down, lay down what's important to you, what you think you would like to talk about or what you want the world to hear about you, and to say, actually, you know what? None of that's important. I'm going to listen to you instead. It's a very humble thing. In verse 21... he says, receive with meekness the implanted word. It's quite grand language, isn't it? Receive with meekness the implanted word. What does he mean? With posture of humility, with a posture of humility, hear from God. Humbly listen to God. That's what he means. To turn your ears towards God. Actually, Jesus in the Gospels will often say, to he who's got ears, let him hear. If you're really listening, you can understand this. If you want to hear from God, we actually have to make that statement of humility to put down everything that's important to us and adopt a posture of listening. So James says, when we listen, God saves us. You think, well, that's quite a leap, isn't it? When we listen, God saves us. Well, you think about it. If you listen, you are really humbling yourself. You're putting down all the things that are important to you. Maybe the things you want to say about yourself and say, I am this sort of person. This is my identity. I want to talk about these things. And actually say, so you know what? I'm just listening to you. That's a very humbling thing. And I think in that moment, we become about God, not about us. And that sounds like our soul being saved, doesn't it? That sounds like giving your life to Jesus. That sounds like a very practical way of living that out. And actually, James says there's a big change in that. He says, look, put down rampant wickedness and filthiness. Which again, amazing words. Put these things down. In other words, put down your life. Put down all of the things that you think are important to you, your previous way of living. Humbly listen to God's. We become at that point redirected. We become about what God's agenda is for our life. We become about what he wants for us, not what about we want. And it doesn't end there, actually. So listening brings change, redirects us back to God. But also, brings life to us. So like I said, James says our souls are saved as we listen. And this kind of a statement of being completely reborn into God, becoming a new person in Jesus. We get brought back to life by Jesus as we listen. And it's not just about adopting a bunch of new rules to follow. We've exchanged one set of worldly rules for now a new set of more perhaps godly rules, which if you think about it, actually, this was a group of scattered people from Jerusalem. They were very used to religious order. They were very used to being told by priests, this is how you people need to live. Now go off and do as you're told. Actually, this is not what we are exchanging. We're not swapping for a new version of that. Ezekiel talks about how God gives us a new heart. Gives us a new way of understanding God. Instead of merely adopting rules, actually, our very hearts, the very core of who we are, is changed by God. That's not something you get by just doing as you're told, by following rules. Actually, the power of God shifts our heart to be about Him. Jesus, in Matthew, he says, "Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God." We don't live just by practical means. We live by hearing from God. We are brought to life by the very words that come to us from God. The very words of Jesus. Jesus himself brings us back to life. So CCM, I want us to get that to listen to God, to hear from him, is not about blindly in following instructions. Otherwise, we could come here every week, sing some songs that are really far too loud. Then I could hand out some instructions to, oh, this week you must do these things. And then you can put them on your fridge or whatever you do and just check it each. Okay, have I done Tim's godly instructions? I haven't. I need to try harder. But that's not what we're about, are we? Actually, we're about adopting a position in our lives so that we get to hear God. And then when we do that, God changes us. I was trying to think of how to describe this in a way, perhaps a different way we can understand. And I realized that actually a few months ago, I decided that I wanted to get into classical music. I did. I don't know why. Sometimes I get a thing. I think, I want to get into this. Mostly I listen to loud, obnoxious music. And I know what happens. You say, I'll listen to this new band. I listen to a new band and think, I know what's going to happen in this song. So I thought, okay, I'm going to try and get into something that's a bit different. It can't be jazz because jazz is just horrifying. So I thought, I'm going to try classical music. Do you seriously try listen to it? It's awful. But what I had to do to get into it, I couldn't just sit there. I had to position myself, okay? I had to adopt a position of humility to classical music, okay? Which sounds a weird thing to say, wasn't it? So I went through the classics. You think, okay, I'll try some Mozart, okay? Not great with Mozart. I'll try some Bach, and some of that was okay. And so I kept listening to stuff, and I know I would talk to people who knew about classical, and they would suggest some names to me in German I'd never heard of. I'd listen to them, and it'd be unlistenable. I'm not going to lie, some of the stuff was awful. And it wasn't going well. I was thinking, I am not going to get into classical music. This isn't going to work. And then I found this piece by a guy called Vaughan Williams. I know nothing about him. I don't know if he's alive or dead. Nothing at all. I found a piece by him. Performed by the Halle Orchestra, who are Manchester Orchestra. So you're thinking, okay, this could be okay. It's Manchester. Although, it probably isn't. But this piece was incredible. I don't know anything about classical music. And someone who's really into it might say, well, that's horrible. You shouldn't be listening to that. It's not the right sort of classical. But I loved it, okay? Wonderful piece of music. And you know how music sometimes just kind of connects with your heart a little bit. And you wake up suddenly. And it doesn't happen very often. I listen to loads of music. I love listening to it. And it's only every now and again that one piece will connect with you. And you suddenly wake up. So I've gone from not understanding, not liking, hating classical to finding a piece that I like. And suddenly, my relationship with classical music has changed. There's a piece of life there. Isn't there? Just brought me to life for a brief moment. But I had to position myself to get there. Like, I had to go find some classical music. I had to spend some time listening to it. So the kids would wander in every now and again and be like, Dad, what is this? I'm like, I don't know. It's German. We'll change that one. But I had to spend time getting to that place. I had to put some effort and some energy into do that. I'd position myself to hear classical music. We have to position ourselves to hear from God. So often, surprising amount of times, I have conversations with people say, I don't really hear from God. I'm like, oh, okay. Do you pray? No, not really. I haven't seen you at church for a while. I don't come to church. I don't really hear much from God anymore. Well, if you come along, there's an increased chance that maybe you'll hear from him. It's not that he only speaks there, but you'll be surrounded by people who are trying to hear from God. It does improve your chances somewhat. Do you ever read your Bible? No, I don't really read my Bible, but I don't hear from God. I'm like, well, perhaps if you gave some time, if you position yourself to set time aside, and it means changing your life, changing things, taking some things out maybe, getting up earlier, whatever it might be, going to bed later, positioning yourself so that you increase the chances of being able to hear from God. So how do we listen to people? Well, we have to put a whole bunch of stuff down, don't we? There's lots of noise and background noise in our lives. And so in order to really listen to someone, you have to put a bunch of stuff down. You have to get to a quiet place. Perhaps if you've got a good mate round you've not seen in a long time, you think, I really want to catch up with them, would you put Netflix on really loudly and then just sit there and not have any conversation? If you do, you're not going to be friends with them for much longer. You're not going to learn anything about them. Actually, if you want to find that connection, if you want to hear, then actually you need to listen and create a place where you can listen. And actually, you might think, well, that sounds a bit legalistic, but actually, it's humble. It's just humble to say, actually, you know what? I need to hear. That's all I know. I need to hear. So humbly, I'm going to change parts of my life. I'm going to order my life in a certain way so that I can listen. And when we humbly listen, like we've talked about, actually change comes. Life comes. Sometimes it's not straight away. Actually, I was thinking about this. We moved to Manchester 10 years ago in the summer. Yeah, 10 years ago. And it was 5 years of praying, where do you want us to go? Before God finally said, Manchester is where I want you to go. 5 years. It's not always instant. And at this point, James shifts gear. Real listening for him actually produces a result, produces something. Something happens. We listen to act. And in verse 22, he says, but be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourself. So having talked about the power and importance of listening, he says, actually, if you listen to everything, but nothing changes, you don't do anything, then actually you might be deceiving yourself a little. Real listening actually requires response. When we position ourselves to hear, like we said, life and change comes. And for James, this was really very important. In his world, there was no point in a Sunday-only Christian. There was no point in a Christian that could read the Bible and hear from God, but never did anything. It never impacted their life. Someone who listens, it has no effect on their life. There was no point to him for that. So he paints us a picture of two different people, just in this last section, okay? And the first person, he says, is someone who looks at themselves in a mirror, then goes away and immediately forgets what they look like. It's pretty weird. You think about it, okay, well, that's a strange thing, because I could just take a selfie and always remember what I look like, couldn't I? I don't know why I'd want to do that, but you can do that. Actually, in that time, there weren't very many mirrors. Simple. So you could look in a mirror and then not see a mirror for quite a long time and forget what you look like. But what he's trying to describe is someone who's happy to hear the words, okay, to look at this thing, even allow it to reflect themselves back to it. So you read the Bible and think, gosh, I'm a bit like that. My life perhaps needs to change, or I can do something about this. Perhaps you read it and you feel provoked or inspired or convicted. Or you have a prayer time, or you come to church or have a great conversation with a friend, and it has some impact on you, has some effect on you, and then you go away and life just carries on as normal. And then you just move on. And James says, it's like you just forget about it. You think, well, how could you do that? Actually, throughout the Old Testament, if you read it, it's a long story of God rescuing his people then forgetting about God. It happens time and again. God rescues his people, they forget him. They start worshipping other things. They start listening to other idols, other gods. And then there is disaster and they repent and God brings them back in and they're in relationship with again. And then they forget about God. And it happens time and again. So when James uses this language, like they forget, actually it's very loaded. People that just happen to walk away. And then he gives us this second person. So this first person who just forgets. They don't allow things to have an impact on themselves. There's some stubbornness there, some hard-heartedness. And then there's the second person, he says, looks into perfect law. And he describes it as the law of liberty. So this is the word of God, that is Jesus, that brings us hope and brings us freedom. The person who looks into this, what happens to this second person? Do they forget as well? Or do they have this amazing, awe-inspiring moment where every question is answered, all the problems are resolved, and they live off that wondrous moment forever? What happens? They persevere, that's what he says. So you have someone who forgets and gives up quick, and then someone who perseveres. First person, easily distracted, listens but doesn't allow it to have an impact. Their decision's made. It just, life keeps trundling on as it always has, and it's a funny thing. Then there's the second person, they persevere. They listen, they act, and then they keep acting. That's what perseverance is. You keep going, even in difficult circumstances. Remember who he was writing to. Remember the situations they found themselves in, the difficulty they found themselves in. And what does James say? Look, you need God. You need to hear from God. You need to persevere to get yourself in that place. James knows that believers in Jesus can be powerfully changed by God, but they need to keep persevering in it as well. Both of those things can be true. In 1982... communist East Germany, in a city called Leipzig, which is right in the far east of East Germany, near to Dresden, where a few of us went last year. In 1982, there was a pastor of a church called Christian, was his name. And it was in the middle of communist times. Okay, East Germany was run by the Communist Party. We were heavily influenced by Moscow. That was when the Soviet Union covered a huge part of the earth. We're a world superpower. And so East Germany was under this covering of that. And this pastor called Christian, he decided he wanted a prayer meeting. You think, okay, fair enough. Well, under communist rule, they heavily were against any level of organized religion, okay, they're actively against it. In fact, that is still, you can still see the effects of that now in the east of Europe, where atheism is much higher than it is even in the UK. It has a profound effect on that part of the world. And they're also really not happy with any sort of public gathering. So they don't like faith, they don't like people gathering in public, so suddenly prayer meetings are quite a difficult thing, right? But this pastor decides, actually, I'm fed up with this situation, the only thing I got is to pray. So he starts this prayer meeting every week. Most weeks there are just a handful of people. He starts this in 1982. Okay, in 1985, a number of years later, he decides that he's going to put a sign up out in front of the prayer meeting saying, everybody's welcome. You think, well, that's obvious. We put a sign up in front of church. Why didn't he do it a few years ago? Well, remember, the communists don't really like public gatherings, so everyone's welcome is quite a charged statement, and they don't really like Christians. So that's another big thing. So slowly momentum builds. That was 1985 when he put the sign out, 1982 when he starts the meeting. Then in 1989, things really shift up a gear. East German government, they decided they were going to block the roads around this prayer meeting. If you attempted to go to this prayer meeting, they would beat you. Okay, so it was civil unrest to get to a prayer meeting. And then on October the 9th, 8,000 people turn up at a prayer meeting. I mean, I'm a church pastor, and that the very number of that amount of people in a building just makes your heart leap a little bit. 8,000 people come to a prayer meeting, but 60,000 people turned up at other churches around the city all on this night, just because they wanted to pray. A month later, communism collapsed. What does perseverance look like? It looks like blessing, doesn't it? James says, you will be blessed in your doing. That pastor, he persevered hard to hear God. He was blessed in his doing. But I bet in 1983, he was like, what am I doing? Gosh, I'm going to a prayer meeting with the same six people. Really, there's a good chance we're going to get thrown into jail for this. What on earth am I doing? And if you'd said to him, just keep going until 1989, you'll be fine. Yeah, how many of us could have done that? So just as we finish, Person one easily forgets, easily distracted, perhaps doesn't want to put down other things so that they can hear, allows the noise of life to keep going. Or person two actually perseveres, pushes in, is aware that actually this isn't a simple thing. Sometimes as Christians we can be quite gung-ho about this sort of stuff, but actually sometimes it is just perseverance. Are we a hearer who forgets or a doer who acts? Now, I don't believe actually James was condemning. I don't think he was giving him a smackdown saying, you stupid forgetters, you're really annoying. I don't think he was doing that at all, because when we forget, often we say, oh, it's not my fault. I just kind of forgot. Life kind of got in the way. Things happened. I'm not even sure how it happens. I think James can see actually there are many conflicting voices that speak in life, aren't there? There are many conflicting noises that can drown out our attempts to hear from God's. And actually, when we've got lots of things going on, it can be very hard to hear the quiet voice of God because there's just so much noise. I don't think James was wanting to smack down. I think he was saying, look, I know it's easy to forget. Actually, he wanted his people to hear the powerful words of Jesus, this bread of life that brings us back into the land of the living, and to live for that voice and that voice only. I feel like as you read this, he's almost saying, look, I can see the pressure you're under. You're my friends, many of you, have left Jerusalem, and there's deep pressure there. Actually, we aren't scattering because of persecution, which I'm grateful for. Having talked to Andre about what that's like for him and his family, I would not want that at all. So let's not be flippant. But I think when I look at you guys, I see pressure. And actually, there's a reason for, a reason for rising mental health problems, anxiety. Actually, there is pressure, deep pressure. There's more pressure on the average 19, 20, 21-year-old now than when I was that age, for sure. It always annoys me when people are dismissive about your age range, millennials. They've no idea what it's like when you get a job and grow up. But actually, the pressure that you guys face, that this generation faces, this age range, is deeper and more acute than it was mine by an absolute distance. Especially if you want to believe in Jesus, I think. I think faith in the West increasingly is looked down upon. Faith in a God who saves. A faith in a God who says, you're a child of God. That's your identity. A faith that says, actually, we live like this. This is how we're called to live, to be different to the world. Actually, there's real pressure there. And what's our job? Are we to be loud and trumpet who we are? Actually, which some people say we should just get up and really explain who we are better and people would understand. Well, actually, be quick to listen, slow to react. There's deep humility there, isn't there? As we seek to hear God, actually, we should seek to hear the world around us. To our friends who perhaps don't understand, is it best to spend more time trying to explain to them, or is it best to spend more time listening to them, understanding actually they're under pressure as well? There's anxiety there for them too. They're to persevere in listening. Guys, I think if you can fathom the idea that you can ask a question of God, hear what he says, and ask a follow-up question, I think God would be blown away as well. Sometimes I wonder if we're caught with God in the party and he thinks, oh, it's the guy who always talks about himself again. Actually, maybe if we can say, oh, God, let's talk about this. And he says something, whether it's through reading the Bible, whether somebody gives us a prophetic word, maybe it's just a slight gut feeling about something, which is how it usually works for me. And then asking a follow-up question, I think that'd be a profound relationship.